Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're back for a bonus segment, on the Ben Jarofsky Show, and this will be airing on Saturday, I guess. And as we speak, it is, what day is today? Thursday. I've talked to a lot of people already. I'm going to have my guest introduce herself with a mic check, mic check, mic check. So tell everybody who you are and quote your favorite poem.
Oh, my goodness. So my name is Sarah Karp. I'm a reporter with WBEZ. And the only one I can think of is, I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high of vale and hill, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils.
William Wordsworth.
Yes.
I
think I had to memorize that in like eighth grade, and that just popped into my head.
That was
but excellent. It wasn't accurate exactly, but it was close enough.
All right, now folks, you can't see us. We don't have the camera on. Mick Dumke is in here as well. He's waiting to do his interview, but Mick and I agree on this thing here. Sarah Karp is a kick-ass reporter, a badass reporter. She's at WBEZ now. Before that, though, her roots were with the
Catalyst, which is a now defunct publication that just covered education. But now we have Chalkbeat, so it's sort of similar.
Mm-hmm. And it was Sarah. I'm not going to go back into history with you and talk about the Supes contract story. Let's not get ahead of myself. So how long have you been covering a public education, not just for WBEZ, but even back in the Catalyst days?
Sure. So I think I would say from 2005 on, but because that's when I went to work for Catalyst. But I actually was covering public education as like my first job out of college. I worked for the Columbia Missourian, which is the town newspaper for Columbia, Missouri. And I was the education reporter there. I took a break and went to the South Town and just did municipal reporting, and then wound up back at Catalyst, where I was doing public education reporting.
And you're doing some of those deep dive stories. Let's just talk about the soup story, S-U-P-E-S. It's sort of, I had to spell it out for our listeners. It may have been forgotten, but I think it's a very important chapter in Mayor Rahm's brief history as the mayor of the city of Chicago. Talk about the soup story.
Well, this was a contract that was let to an organization called Supes, which was a principal training, recruitment, sort of school district leadership company that was based out of Wilmette. And they got a contract for like $20 million just about a month after Mayor Rahm Emanuel and his school's chief, Barbara Bird Bennett, closed 50 schools to save money because the district was broke. And as it turned out, this company had worked with Bird Bennett before, and she had planned to get a kickback from them once she was no longer working for Chicago Public Schools. I wrote about how the contract was sort of suspicious, to say the least. I ran around for a couple years saying this was a racket and encouraging other people to please cover this. And eventually the inspector general sort of uncovered this whole kickback scheme, and she's now sitting in a federal prison because of it. So, and the two people who ran, well, one of them who ran Supes is no longer in there, but the main guy, Gary Solomon, is still in prison.
Now, one of the things that struck me about your story that you did about the contract, you were pointing out, you said you did something suspicious about it. You pointed out many of the inconsistencies in it. You pointed out, you raised a lot of red flags that should have been picked up by, in my humble opinion now, by the Board of Education, by the school board, by the mayor's office, by everybody who oversees public education in the city of Chicago. And I wrote about this in the Reader several times, and I didn't mean to belittle you, but if I go, if Sarah Karp can see this, a reporter for Catalyst, one woman, why is it that somehow or other the Board of Education, with some of the brightest minds of corporate Chicago, can't see it? Why is it that the mayor's office, with some of the brightest minds, young minds, okay, maybe they're not so bright, but they're minds, and there's a lot of them, why can't they see? And I have my own personal opinion, but I've just wondered what yours is, Sarah. Why did they not see what you saw very early on?
You know, I don't know that they didn't see it. I think that maybe they chose not to see it because, you know, Bird Bennett had just done something that was very difficult, which was close 50 schools. And she's a Black woman who closed 50 predominantly Black schools. And I think my suspicion is that there was sort of an acknowledgement that we're going to give her, Barbara wants this, and we're going to give it to her. You know, I don't know. I don't have that, you know, like sort of buttoned up, but that's sort of how I kind of took it. There were people that raised some eyebrows. I mean, there's emails that were uncovered where people are like, what's up with this? You know, but I think that in the end, somebody from up high said, let it go through. Because, I mean, this is a single source contract. The biggest thing that's a big question was, like, why would you hire this little itty-bitty principal training company that's, like, out of a storefront in Wilmette and not hire all these universities that we have in the city of Chicago that do principal training for decades and decades and have shown to be proven principal training places? You know, that was my big thing. Like, what is this? What, you know, but I'm pretty sure somebody said that, but they just didn't have the power to stop it.
Yeah, that has always been my feeling. I've always felt that $20 million contract to Supes was sort of the price that Mayor Rahm was willing to pay to have Barbara Bird Bennett stand up in front of the cameras and take the responsibility, be the public face for closing 50 schools. I don't even think Mayor Rahm wasn't even in the city of Chicago when the announcement was made to close those. But I believe he was skiing
something
in
like
Utah.
That, right?
It was
right.
Utah. For some reason, Utah sticks in my mind. Mick is nodding his head. He's a better memory than I do. Yeah, he was skiing in Utah. And so it was as though the $20 million was, all right, Barbara wants it. We'll give it to her. She's going to do her thing. And peace will reign in the city of Chicago. That's my read of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much what I've thought. Now, as I said, I don't have like it on the record or buttoned up, but I think that there was, you know, that was pretty much true. He chose not to see what you could see.
And so then when you look back and you consider what was going on at that time with closing the 50 schools, do you have a sense of how legitimate closing all those 50 schools was? Do you think it was an objective process, like a scientific, rigorously scientific, fair process before they reached the decision to close those 50 schools?
You know, this is the thing. I think that the school district had gotten into a very bad situation because for years and years, Daley opened a whole bunch of schools and charter schools, but not just charter schools, magnet schools, selective enrollment schools. And meanwhile, the population, at first it was just slowly going down, but then it, you know, rapidly went down under Rahm Emanuel's tenure. But so what they had was they had all these new schools, and they didn't close schools under Daley as rapidly as they opened schools. So then you had this big sort of supply-demand problem, right? Now, Daley was savvy enough to know that you can't close more than maybe five schools at a time, maybe a handful. And, you know, they were strategic. They wouldn't close, like, all the schools in one neighborhood. It was like a school here and a school there. So then, you know, there would be outcry for sure, but it wasn't like this everywhere in the city rose up. Emanuel, somebody gave him some advice, I don't know who, told him just go head first and do it. And he was like, I'm going to just rip the Band-Aid off and close all these schools. And, you know, the biggest problem with that is that logistically, how can, you know, he kept saying, oh, I'm going to make sure these kids get into better schools. But logistically, that was, it turned out to be impossible. The University of Chicago Consortium of School Research showed that those kids, you know, did not have better outcomes. And not only that, but we spent like $50 million on schools that these kids are going to, and they still didn't get a better education. And in fact, a lot of those schools now are, you know, once again, underutilized, underperforming. And now I think this is Lori Lightfoot's problem. What do you do with those schools?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, we'll get into what the future is, what Lori Lightfoot's going to do with the public education. You recently, this talking about the closing of the schools was one of the features, one of the aspects of a investigation you did, or a story you did about Rahm's legacy after 8 years of Rahm running the public schools. And he basically ran the public schools for those 8 years. So you talk about it as a mixed bag. To explain what you were getting at in that story.
Well, there is some evidence that performance has improved in the city of Chicago. High school graduation rates are up. I think that they might not be up as much as like the school district says, but I do think there has been an increase. Test scores are up, whereas we used to be, you know, really the bottom of the barrel. We're not quite the bottom of the barrel anymore on attainment, but also our growth is like outpacing the nation. So now there is some question as to whether the Mayor Emanuel was responsible for that, or whether that was the outcome of many, many years of changes, right? Because in education, you don't steer a ship like in a, you know, you don't turn a ship quickly. It goes very slowly. But the thing is that even among all this, you know, it's good news, there is a lot of chaos on the ground, and there's just no question about it. I mean, from closing from a teacher strike early on, then closing 50 schools, then one CEO left, then resigned, then another CEO we have come in, and then, you know, he is intent on, you know, using budget crises to pressure the state to change the education funding formula. And he, you know, one year after another, we have, you know, the sky is falling. And a lot of cuts, cuts to classrooms, and a lot of backdoor cuts that were hard to really detect until they actually happened. And then he resigns in disgrace. And finally, over the last 2 years, we have one CEO who seems to be staying, Janice Jackson, and maybe some more stability financially. But that's way at the end of the road. I mean, we went through a lot of years where, you know, it just seemed like one bad news story after the other.
And do you think that there was some sort of overall principle that Rahm was applying to public education when he was at the head, you know, of the schools in the city of Chicago? Or was it just moving from one crisis to another, one PR stunt to another?
You know, the thing that he did not embrace was the idea that we need to invest everywhere similarly. So there was not, right now there's a lot of talk about equity. But under him, you know, if you look at like where construction dollars were spent, and even if you look at how just how schools were funded, you do see sort of a shift that he was trying to keep the middle class, the upper middle class, those neighborhoods, the inner city, you know, the central city. He was trying to make sure that those schools were vibrant and strong, and, you know, made a lot of decisions to sort of kowtow to keeping those families, you know, in Chicago. It's questionable. He would say, I'm sure he'd say he did do some investing in, you know, poor neighborhoods, Black Latino neighborhoods, in those schools, but I don't think that it was on the same level. And I think that when you look at a lot of those backdoor cuts, like to special education or even like librarians and art teachers and music teachers, I think the ones that when there are cuts among those, the ones that got hit the most were the Black Latino schools serving poor children, and the schools that were serving predominantly white children are predominantly upper middle class children, they were able to balance some of that with either private fundraising or even just like, you know, shifting some things around so it didn't hit them as hard. And so I do think that right now there are a lot of inequities in the system, and something that Janice Jackson talks about a lot, trying to shore those up, and we'll see what happens. Because, you know, when you say we want equity, that's not equality, and that means that sometimes it looks like if you're a parent of a child in once in a school that serves mostly upper middle class, it might feel like a cut to you, and not seeing it as like an advantage for the poor kids that need that. And I think that if there were really some strong moves to really balance the system out, I think that you might see some uproar from some of the people that have been sitting pretty for a while.
Well, that's an interesting point that you're raising. I personally, I'm speaking for myself here, I've always felt that if we're going to have a segregated city, which apparently we're incapable of not having a segregated city, I don't even know if that goal of integration is being pursued by anybody in the country, let alone the city of Chicago. So if we're going to have a segregated city and a segregated public school system that's divided by race and class, particularly by class, I've always believed you should spend more money in the poorer schools to try to overcome the disadvantages of being poor in America or the advantages of being well-to-do in America. That just seemed the most logical thing to do. So I've always looked at it and spending money, but just listening to you now, you're absolutely correct. When it comes to cutting, which is what we've been through for the last 8 years, we should have cut more in the well-to-do schools, just following the logic that you lay out, because they have the capability, the parent groups have the capability to raise the money to offset the cuts that they're experiencing. Like a lost librarian or a lost salary for a librarian on the north side of Chicago at a well-to-do school is far less of an impact than it is, let's say, in Roseland.
Right. And I'll never forget when there was a time when they were going to cut kindergarten, not make as much kindergarten full day, and sort of scale back, and they weren't going to cut kindergarten, but they were going to cut some kindergarten programs. And you know, Ogden, which is right in the center of the city, they sent out a note to the parents. They're like, well, if you want to keep full day kindergarten, everybody has to pay $3,000. Well, somehow they were able to keep it. Now, if you're in a different neighborhood, you can't send out a letter and say, you know, hey, everybody, you know, $3,000 for a lot of people is like, that's a fortune. That's more than they'll have in their savings account ever in their lifetime. So there's an imbalance there. And, you know, but I really think it's a hard sell to say that we're going to try to make things fairer by not giving everybody exactly the same. I think there's going to be, if that starts happening, which it probably should start happening, that's, you know, it'll create controversy.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be uproar. It's one of the principles like of Social Security. Everybody gets the same amount of Social Security. And that's why fundamentally, guess what? You can't touch Social Security. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because even like Warren Buffett gets Social Security.
Right, you're touching
Warren Buffett's money. Donald Trump gets Social Security.
Right.
But when it comes to funding schools, you're right. If they're cutting funding, or some school on the South Side doesn't have nearly the clout of a Warren Buffett or a Donald Trump. So I see your point on that one. You know, when I was listening to you talk, Sarah, I'm thinking, I don't want to say when you graduated, but you are a graduate of the Chicago Public Schools. And one thing I hear when I was hearing you talking about whether schools are getting better and how schools are getting better, this is something that at a vantage point I've had for being in this town for so long. I'm always hearing about how bad schools were back before and how much better they are now. And so many of the people saying that are people who actually like went to the schools when they were quote unquote bad. And they're all like leaders of Chicago. I remember a debate. I saw that Mayor Rahm was not at the debate. It was 2011. Mick has heard me tell the story so many times. You had Reverend Meeks was on the stage. Miguel DeValle was on the stage. Carol Moseley Braun was on the stage. I'd have voted for any of them over Rahm. Well, maybe not Meeks. But no, I would have voted for Meeks over. Anyway, the point is they were all graduates of Chicago Public Schools.
Yeah.
And the people in the audience were, and they all said we were graduates of the public schools. And they go, why can't we have the glory days back like when you were in school, and I'm like, nobody was calling those glory days when back in the 70s about Chicago public schools. So it seems like they're always getting better, but then that 10 years, they're bad. You understand what
right,
I'm saying?
That's right, yeah.
I was like, how can you keep getting better and you still be bad?
It's just like my old friend George Schmidt, who passed away, unfortunately, used to say, he used to say, like, they're always cutting central office, like, yeah, to show they're feeling the pain. And if they cut as much as central office, you know, it'd be like negative people there. You know, there'd be, yeah. So it doesn't make sense. But I mean, you know, the thing is that measuring a school system is relative, right? I mean, it's all about where your vantage point is. And in a school system with 600 schools, the experience is different. I mean, if you're going to Whitney Young today, or if you were going to Whitney Young in 1985, you still had probably a pretty good experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's different schools that were not having that experience. I actually think some of the things that I experienced at Lincoln Park, went to Lincoln Park High School, would not actually be tolerable today. I think there are some things that are a little better. However, I'm not so much sure, because sometimes when I talk to kids and they're like, oh no, that's still happening.
Like what, for instance, give me an example.
So I was not in the International Baccalaureate program, which was their like highlight program.
Smart kid. That was the smart kid program from the Lincoln
right,
Park.
That's yeah. right. I was in the drama program. Surprise, surprise. And, you know, so in Lincoln Park at the time was a really diverse school. It had, you know, IB, but it also had Drew from Caprini Green, which was actually a very big, you know, public housing complex at the time. And so the non-IB students did not get the same education as the IB students. And we had teachers who came to class 20, 30 minutes late, or slept all the time during class, and gave us, I never forget, one of our teachers slept all the time during class, and one of the, he gave this girl a D, and she like assaulted him on the corner, and then he said, okay, I'll give you an A. So, you know, it's like sort of.
Oh my goodness. Wait a minute. He went from a D to an A, just, she assaulted him?
Well, she walked up to him and she's like, I forget the guy's name, but she was like, what's up with this? You know, why are you giving me a D? And, you know, he had really no explanation, because
he was asleep
like every day during class. And so, you know, there were things like that were going on, and I think, oh, in this day and age, I can't imagine that would be happening. I mean, we got, you know, teacher evaluations and, you know, reach these exams that kids take at the beginning of the year and the end of the year, and that this would, and principal observation, this would show up. However, you know, then you still go out and you're like, you talk to some kids and they're like, yeah, we got a teacher here that sleeps all day. And you're like, oh, maybe that doesn't, maybe I'm thinking things are way different than when they're not.
Yeah, so. my general sense of things is that not much, I just wrote this for the reader, it's funny, it's always on my mind. Really, not all that much has changed with Chicago public schools since I moved to Chicago in 1981. There's various degrees of solvency when it comes to the budget, really related to the larger economic trend. So when I moved to Chicago in 1981, we're in the midst of a horrific recession. You're too young to remember this, but it totally bottomed out the city of Chicago, transformed whole neighborhoods. So it was a real struggle for Jane Byrne and Harold Washington to raise the money to fund the public schools. We always have, that varies, you get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a huge, like you're saying, enormous system with kids from middle class backgrounds, really poor backgrounds, trying to figure it all out. Kind of just seems like it, all these general ways, it's the same. Do you disagree with me?
Well, you know what I think is one of the big differences, and this came in with No Child Left Behind under Clinton, is that, actually it could be under Bush, but No Child Left Behind. Right, which was
Bush.
The big with
yeah.
Bush. It was a big accountability. The big accountability thing that made it by subgroups that you had mm-hmm. to put out test scores. And I actually think that if anything has changed, it's that we have all these tests. I mean, we didn't used to have all these published test scores. We took tests, we took standardized tests, but now we have it in a way that the accountability is very, very strong, and there's consequences that people can feel. I mean, your school could close, you could get fired. You know, and I think that has sort of changed the pressure points. you know, so it's one thing when you say, oh, kids are growing now more than they ever grew. Well, we didn't measure growth until just like, you know, 6 or 7 years ago. You know, growth was not anywhere not on our agenda like mm-hmm. that. So, yeah. And so maybe people were growing in the 80s. Great. But we just didn't know because we didn't measure growth. So
we weren't paying attention to it.
Right.
Well, one of the things that you see when you see like the, what is it called? NAEPS, the
right,
test
right.
that measures growth and breaks it down by racial categories, is that in the city of Chicago, the gap in performance between the well-to-do and the poor remains very vast.
Right.
So
right.
If you just view it as an absolute comparison, that's what has not changed since you were in school or since I went to moved to Chicago. I know you have to get to a press conference. Usually I keep my bonus people in for like an hour. It's a long ordeal. So I'll let you go. But I do want to get your thoughts on the future of education in the most general sense with Lori Lightfoot. This is on my mind again. She made a whole new slate of appointments to the school board, which I was very impressed with the caliber of them in terms of their commitment to Chicago Public Schools. It wasn't the typical brand of rich guys that Mayor Rahm loves so much. But what do you think that's going to do to the movement for an elected school board?
Well, you have to imagine that this is something that she ran on, that eventually she'll come up with something that she will go forward with. I think people are pretty impressed with the people that she's called to be members of the school board. But I don't think that that's going to let anybody off the hook for an elected school board. I feel like this is something that's been, you know, it's prior to Rahm, people were calling for an elected school board. And no matter what, if the board is appointed, they are also to some degree beholden. Will they vote against what the mayor wants? Will they? I mean, I don't know, but I sort of doubt it. You know, I do. I do. I mean, they might listen more. They might respond more. They might not be as patronizing as perhaps Frank Clark, the former board president, was. They, you know, they might be a little more, you know, empathetic with people. But when it comes down to it, if they vote an agenda, every vote's a yes, and the debate doesn't seem real, then people are going to still be frustrated.
Are you still excited to be a school reporter? You've been doing this for how many years now?
Well, I mean, 2005. So my baby was born. That's when I went to Catalyst, and he's 14. So a while. Yes, because it's ever fascinating. It's ever fascinating. I mean, it's politics. It's business reporting. It's, you know, I get to talk to some, you know, I always think that the best part of my job is when I'm talking to kids or, you know, teenagers or parents, and just reminded that, like, this is, you know, education is what they see as like their way to change their lives. And I feel like everybody desperately really wants for their child to get a good education. And so, yeah, I mean, those things still impress me. I mean, I still haven't gone to a graduation that I haven't cried at, yeah. You know, I'm still sort of an old softy when it comes
Wait, Sarah, what songs, it's been a while since I've been at graduation. My youngest graduated 2010. So what songs do they play now? They usually play that Boys to Men song at graduation. You know, do they still play that song? You know the one I'm talking about?
You know,
Mick will sing it for you if you
okay,
want.
Okay, good. Go for it. I'll tell you what, my son's graduating from eighth grade, and he's going to play Somewhere Over the Rainbow on the double bass.
Oh, you'll be weeping. You'll the double bass?
I know.
What is it? The double bass?
It's just a huge violin.
Like the Chicago Symphony Orchestra double bass. Your kid knows how to play a double bass?
Very poorly, but he can play Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Don't you call that a stand-up bass? Isn't that what you call
maybe
it?
It's a stand-up
bass. No, double bass in classical music. It's like, and we had Steve Lester was on. Anyway, he plays double bass for the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and he was their union rep when they went on strike.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But Mick, now that you join us, please sing that Boys to Men song that you were going to sing.
I can't sing it, but you're talking about the end of the road.
Yeah.
It's so hard to say goodbye.
That's another one.
Oh, that's what they sing at graduations.
Yeah, they sing all sorts of songs.
Let's hear that double bass again. How did that sound? All right.
Well, I'll tell you tomorrow. I'm going to a preschool graduation.
You'll be weeping.
I'm going to be weeping.
Kindergarten graduation, Sarah Karp, man, they just kill me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're so sweet.
They're so sweet, and they get those little angel faces.
Yeah.
God, they're going to become adolescents.
Yes.
Anyway, all right, Sarah Karp, I'm going to let you go because I know you really want to get to that press conference. And the thing I really wanted to talk to you about, which I'm going to bring you back to talk about, is this fantastic segment you do, What I Learned from My Kids, teachers really opening up about things they learned from their kids. You talk about crying. There's some of those things will really just make you just break down, you know. And so the next time we come on, maybe we'll bring in and play some of the excerpts and talk about it.
That'd be great.
All right. That's the great Sarah Karp at Pride and Joy of Lincoln Park High School. We call her the Bulldog because she goes after those Board of Ed people and does not let up. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Take care, everybody.
Have you ever wondered how to say good morning in Italian or what is goodbye in French? You can ask Alexa. Just say, what is happy birthday in German? Or how do you say hello in Japanese? Do you want to know how to say I love you in Spanish? Ask Alexa and start learning a new language today.